probably too much information. Anyway, so this is a study that we did on alcohol availability in neighborhood characteristics in Los Angeles and southern Louisiana. The study team included myself, Deborah Cohen, Chris Bigley, Matt Schoenlau from the RAND Corporation. I'm also a professor at Cal State Dominguez Hills. Our colleagues in Louisiana included Thomas Farley, who's actually now in New York on assignment, Richard Scribner, and then lastly, Paul Robinson, who's a colleague of mine at Charles, former colleague of mine at Charles L. Drew University of Medicine and Science. The study was funded by the National Institutes of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism, for which we thank. And then a lot of the work in terms of the data we're presenting was actually done by Heather Gensel and Kamal Williams and Michael Murley, Kelly Trabacco, and Eric Alicone and Catherine Haywood, who collected the data on the off-premise alcohol outlets. So our objectives were to look at some alternative measures of alcohol availability, and then to examine whether the various measures of alcohol availability differed by neighborhood characteristics. As Dr. Jones-Webb suggested, and demonstrated, I think, very ably, you know, the kinds of alcohol availability that people experience as individuals is driven a lot by other social structural factors and socioeconomic factors in our society, like residential segregation, poverty, etc. So we're just trying to dig into that a little bit deeper. Typically, people have talked about alcohol outlet density as sort of the main physical alcohol availability measure. And that's been shown to be related to both alcohol consumption in some studies and also negative alcohol-related harms in some studies, but not all. One of the things we wanted to get at is, of course, the sort of simple fact that you have a lot of outlets in your neighborhood does not take into account all the different kinds of outlets, right? So it's different, potentially different, to have a supermarket rather than a liquor store, or to have a 7-Eleven rather than a mom-and-pop convenience store. So we wanted to get at that. We also looked, as Dr. Jones' website did, at some of the promotional advertisements that were in the outlets, as well as the sort of point-of-sale things and the chilled beverages. Okay. So our main study measures are alcohol availability per roadway mile and then also per capita. And then those research assistants I mentioned, Heather et al., went to outlets in 217 census tracts in Los Angeles County and Louisiana and then collected systematic data on lease price, on shelf space, on advertisements, and a variety of other things. I'll get into that in a little bit. This just shows you the sampling frame. We picked, we randomly selected census tracts that were around at the time we did the study, or at the time the study started. I was at Charles R. Drew University. So we used that as a focal point and then randomly selected census tracts around that. The one point about this is ignore those red things, and then the second thing is that what we tried to do was have the tracks not be contiguous to deal a little bit with the issues of autospatial correlation. Did I say that right? You know what I mean. And then the same thing here, and you know, I don't even have to talk. I can just go, this is how clear this talk is. Anyway, so these are the southern Louisiana ones. So I think there were about 12 census tracts that actually busted in the study. Okay. So in terms of observing the encoding the alcohol outlets, we did lease price for beer, malt liquor, distilled spirits, and wine. We also looked at placement of beer and malt liquor. So that regarded, you know, like if it's at eye level in a refrigerated case, for instance. And there's some really dramatic differences. I try to spend as much time as I can in the community. And, you know, you can go into some neighborhoods and the malt liquor will be, you know, three things long and all right at eye space. And then you go into other ones and they're at the very bottom and you'd really have to look to find them. So those kinds of things happen. And we sort of just try to capture that systematically. We also looked at shelf space, both in general for alcoholic beverages and then by beverage type. And just measured simple linear feet, reasoning that most of the depth of both counters or shelves in both supermarkets and even liquor stores are more or less uniform. So there's not a whole grain to it. At least I hope that's true, given that we didn't measure the depth. And then, like I said, actual advertising, we estimated total floor space and then calculated inner quarter liability, which turned out to generally be pretty decent for most of the measures. Now, the one problem you have with this technique, and I think it's funny, when I was listening to Dr. Jones Webb's talk, I was replaying in my mind our own experiences. So one of the reasons why you just count exterior ads rather than more is that it turns out that alcohol outlet owners don't like you like measuring stuff in their stores. They don't dig that. And so we had to create both a long form and a short form, and then use some missing data calculations to make up the difference between the two forms, given the fact that cooperation was not uniform across the different types of outlets. And then at the demographic level, we looked at percent African-American, Hispanic, white, male unemployment, family poverty rate, percentage of households receiving public assistance, median household income. And, you know, in one way, one of the nice justifications for, aside from the fact that, you know, Deborah Cohen and Tom Farley and Richard Scribner have been longtime colleagues and so trust each other and can work together easily. But by including both Los Angeles and Louisiana, we ended up getting a really nice mix of the racial flavors, as I like to call them, which you might not have gotten if you just restricted it to either Louisiana or just to Los Angeles. In terms of the actual outlet, our census tract sample, we were ultimately left with 187. We lost 11 thanks to Katrina, which happened sort of in the middle of the study. Actually towards the end of the study. And then there were some tracts that didn't have any off-sale alcohol outlets in them. And then there was one that was an outlier that we just excluded. Okay, so this is just, this is not of the actual, no, I'm sorry, this is the looking at the census tracts in our sample and then comparing them to the overall, MSAs that were more or less represented. And as you can see, we have this nice racial distribution, about a third African-American, third Hispanic, third white. Unemployment rates, more or less the same. Family poverty was a little bit higher in our census tracts as opposed to the larger regions. And median household income was pretty close as well. Okay, so here are the shelf space measures. These are linear feet. Just beginning at the top, the mean total shelf space in each census tract was about 70 feet in terms of the shelf alcohol-related shelf space. Now, you know, when you look at the standard deviation and some of the minimum and maximum, you realize there's a great deal of variation in that. So these are sort of all over the map. But, you know, some of the basic things that we know about the way alcohol is sold and how people consume it are stand out. So there's more beer shelf space than there's distilled spirit shelf space. The least amount is for malt liquor shelf space. And then we looked at that also as per capita, and that just sort of shows the same generic relationships. In general, there's about for every 2 miles, there was basically one outlet on average. And then the total number of outlets per census tract was sort of the third one down on the left. Was 3, that was the mean. And then price per ounce, and this is sort of, you know, again, I mean, a lot of the research points to this. Obviously, distilled spirits often cost more, wine costs a little bit less, and then malt liquor was the least expensive. And remember, there's almost, you know, twice as much alcohol in an ounce of malt liquor beer as compared to a regular beer. So you're getting a lot of bang for your buck with malt liquor. All right, so this is just the bivariate correlations between shelf space and some of the community characteristics. It's probably a little hard to read. The bolded ones are the ones that were significantly associated. So we saw that shelf space decreased as family poverty increased, that it decreased as male unemployment decreased, and households receiving public assistance, and then went up as household income increased and percent wide increased. So, you know, this kind of detail sort of shows you some of what happens when you break down the outlets into sort of some characteristics about the census tracts. This isn't surprising. So if you were in a higher income neighborhood, what would you have? You'd have a supermarket, which are enormous and have lots of shelf space and cover a lot of things. And so that this is sort of capturing those economic realities. And then you see the same thing happening with, you know, basically all the other things. So if you're lower income, for most of the beverages, you're going to have less shelf space in your census tract, with the exception of malt liquor, which has the inverse relationship. So, and this again points to, I think, a lot of things that, you know, all of us know in the community, and and we've demonstrated in a couple studies, but malt liquor beer is just a lot more available in lower income areas, certainly at this Bayberry level. Okay, and then this next one shows the sort of roadway miles, outlets per roadway mile, excuse me, and per capita, and then the price data. Again, I just draw your attention to the bolded figures. So here you get that change. So again, because of the economic structure of these neighborhoods, what I think happens relatively consistently is that lower income areas end up having more outlets and less self space, right? Because big box stores, supermarkets aren't going to want to be in those neighborhoods because they can't. I guess they don't make money. Right? Maybe that's the explanation. But that's a relatively consistent, I think, finding in literature, and that's what we found here. So you get this sort of flip relationship with outlets. So if you look at median household income, which is the sort of fifth column, I guess, how you count, outlets per roadway mile actually are inversely associated to household income, whereas the poverty measures, unemployment, households aren't receiving public assistance, are associated with more outlets. And then lastly, let me just point out the malt liquor and beer price. So as malt liquor prices and beer prices go up, they're inversely related, right? So as price goes up, the number of African Americans go down. So again, pointing out the ways in which there may be some systematic differences in the way these beverages are marketed and sold to African Americans and other low-income groups. All right. So this is the last table you won't be able to read. So this just shows the multivariate model of what came out when we put everything in the hopper. So in terms of shelf space, male unemployment rates, and it's a little deceptive because we then flip the orientation, so the X is now the Y and the Y is now the X, just to keep you on your toes. So total shelf space is inversely related to percent of male unemployment. Distilled spirit shelf space is also inversely related to that. So, you know, total shelf space, and then the most expensive alcohol, which is the distilled spirits, are going to be less available in lower socioeconomic areas. In the sample, and this might be, I think there's probably two things going on in terms of our sample. We found that as a percentage white went up, the amount of shelf space for malt liquor went down. So that's sort of capturing the sort of cumulative focus on minorities. You can almost flip that. That you see with the availability of that product. And then lastly, just as the bivariates showed, family poverty was, as family poverty went up, the number of outlets went by roadway mile went up. Okay, so then let me just say one last comment about this. So we had the odd thing of African-American race was inversely associated with the number of roadway miles. And sort of my take on this, and we did separate this out by state, so it's different by state, so in Louisiana versus California. But one of the things that's happened in Los Angeles, and most of you, unless you live there, won't know this, is that there's been a massive demographic shift with Central American Latinos moving into historically African-American neighborhoods. And so I think that has a lot to do with why you have this change. So the African-American population is actually being pushed, diluted, and then pushed into more affluent areas on the west side of Los Angeles, or otherwise moving out into Antelope Valley and Lancaster, which is sort of on the way to Bakersfield. So I think that's what explains that. Okay, so poverty was related to outlets per roadway mile, as we would have expected. And then we had these new findings related to total shelf space and distilled spirits, which point more, I think, to the role of economics and neighborhood conditions, explaining that. The malt liquor shelf space result is not exactly what we've expected, but I think it makes sense in terms of the kind of marketing that Dr. Jones-Webb was associated with lease price, which has been the case. There's not been a lot of price studies done, but to the extent that they have been done, that's been the general finding on that. So our limitations included, as I described, the store coding data that we were missing. It's a cross-sectional study, so causality cannot be inferred. There's a little bit of mismatch between when the census data was collected and when we did the observations, and that could be a bigger problem in Los Angeles than maybe Louisiana, where there's a little bit more mobility. So I think what these point to is the important role that socioeconomic conditions in a neighborhood play. Now, again, because of residential segregation, that has a race component, but I think it's useful to remember that it's probably... Am I still at 1 minute? You can't stop me now. Anyway, so the malt liquor is less available in white areas. You know, some of the research I've done with my colleague Deidre Brown Taylor really points to how malt liquor is used differently, has a different impact on people when they drink it, and that's certainly something that I think bears more looking at. So I think obviously a lot of people talk about reducing density. And then I guess the thing I would like to see is some more exploration of, you know, what other kind of beverages. You know, beverages don't have to be available everywhere. You know, so one idea, certainly with these higher alcohol content, malt liquors and some of the wine products or grape wines like the Ciscos, you know, I don't think there's any reason for them to be treated as a beer and a wine. Like, they're a different kind of product. They're going to be used differently. They are products.